You're listening to the CEO Warrior Podcast, where more wealth, freedom, and market domination are only one step away. Hosted by business warrior Mike Agliero, owner of an over $28 million business, Gold Medal Service, author of four books, including The Secrets of Business Mastery, founder of the Warrior Fast Track Academy, CEOWarrior.com, and the CEO Warrior Circle Elite Mastermind, and publisher of Home Service Max Magazine. And now, your host.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CEO Warrior Show. My name is Mike Agliero, and this is the show dedicated to business owners, teaching you how to fast-track your business growth and give you practical, doable tips that you can implement today. So grab your pen and notepad, and let's get started. Today, I'm excited. I'll be interviewing Jason Friedman, and I mean, we're going to talk about the subject of how do you put your customers at the core of your business there and design the journey that these customers of yours go through. I'm excited to hear about this. Let me tell you a little bit about Jason first. Jason is the founder and CEO of CX Formula, and that helps fast-growing entrepreneurial companies gain an unfair advantage over their competition through the art and science of designing their customer experience journey, a step-by-step process for delighting customers in a way that turns them into raving fans for life. Now, Jason has increased his clients' same-store sales over 400%. I mean, raised over $6 billion U.S. dollars, I guess that is, for endorsements and propelled clients' loyalty, profits, referrals, team commitment, and engagement. I mean, using the CXF or CX formula methodology. Now, he was named Ernst and Young Entrepreneur of the Year for Business Services and made the Inc. 5000 list for three consecutive years. Now, his clients range from Fortune 100s to solopreneurs in industries as diverse as retail, Foot Locker, Adidas, Nike, hospitality areas with W Hotels, Universal Studios, Disney, Burger King. I mean, it's just a slew. I mean, financial services, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Fidelity. So he has definitely been in a lot of industry here. And in 2008, Jason sold his first company, Creative Realty, in the high eight figures. I mean, he has started and successfully exited four other businesses, medical diagnostics, automotive, spirits, and digital media software platform. Man, I'm getting pumped here to bring Jason on. And Jason's passion for crafting exceptional customer experience was born in entertainment, where he worked as a lighting design director, check this out, and roadie for Peter Gabriel, Rush, and international Broadway tours, which Rush is one of my bands from childhood there. I love those guys, along with Fiddler on the Roof and La Mancha. So without any further delay, Jason, how are you today?
I'm awesome, Mike. Thanks for having me on the show.
Now, wait a second, Jason. When you say Rush, we're talking about, like, the band Rush with, like, Tom Sawyer.
Like, Geddy Lee, Alex Lifeson, Neil Peart, the Canadian power trio themselves.
Hell yeah. I'm having, like, flashbacks. That was one of the – that's one of the bands I've probably seen about four times, and I could just – I dig that, so that's awesome. So before we get cranking, Jason, into things, why don't you tell me, like, what's going on in Jason's world right now?
Yeah, I'm real excited, man. Like you said, I've had a few successful exits from businesses, and for the past 5 years, I had a non-compete. I wasn't able to work with businesses on creating customer experiences by design, and I've had a lot of other things that I've been doing, but Now I get to really go back to where my passion lies and work with small businesses and entrepreneurs and help them really crush their competition through this methodology that we've used for years. And it's just amazing. It's just awesome. I love what I do.
Yeah, that sounds really exciting. Tell me, before we dig into, like, talking about all kinds of solutions and that stuff, why don't you first tell me, like, what's the problem out there with companies and how they're treating their customers and stuff?
Well, you know, I think we're all customers, right? I mean, the one thing that we all have in common, regardless of what business we own, we all buy stuff from other places, products, services, and what have you. And, you know, we're all always seemingly dissatisfied with something. Like, we talk to our friends and family and our colleagues, and most of the comments we hear are negative. They're frustrations, they're annoyances, they're dissatisfactions. And that is becoming more and more prevalent, mostly because we have this, the biggest megaphone in the world. The internet has facilitated everyone becoming more communicative, giving them a platform to publish where they can reach tens, if not thousands or even millions of people instantly with a complaint, with a dissatisfaction, with a grumbling. And our consumers today, you know, all of us, we're smarter than we used to be. We have more access to information from the internet. I mean, in fact, if you go to buy a car, you probably know more about the car from all the research you do online than the guy that's selling you the car. So we've become a much smarter consumer and a much more entitled consumer, and businesses have not necessarily stepped up to deal with this new reality, and they don't understand their customers. In fact, a lot of research, one of the statistics I like to point to is research by the Bain & Company, and what they found is that they surveyed all these different businesses, and they surveyed the CEOs and said, how great do you think your customer experience is? And these CEOs, 80% of them said that they thought they had a superior customer experience. When they surveyed the exact customers of those businesses, they found that only 8% of those customers agreed. So there's this 80% on the company side, 8% on the customer side. There's such a huge disconnect. I call that the experience gap. It's where, like, we don't know what's going on with our customers. We assume that no news is good news and that they're satisfied or they're happy. But that's not true. And it's a shame because you spend all this energy trying to build up your business, trying to motivate your team, do all these great things, but yet the people that you're serving, the people that you, in theory, care so much about, aren't happy and you don't know about it. And when you find out, oftentimes it's too late. It's because they've already left or they've already made other plans. And it's just becoming more and more of this. I call it an epidemic because I really believe it is.
Yeah. And so it's kind of like business owners are, like, they have their own level of delusion. Like, they think because they're good at their skill set and the fact that they're happy with what they did, that they're just assuming that the customer is happy. What is it? And part of this epidemic, Jason, is it that they're just, like, as business owners, they just don't know to ask the question? I mean, what's going on here?
Well, I mean, I think there's a whole host of different problems. You know, first of all, it's confronting the brutal facts, right? It's like looking in the mirror and seeing really what's happening. But, you know, the statistics prove out also that most people remain silent. Most customers, when they're unhappy about, you know, some stuff, they remain silent to the company. They don't go back and feedback to the company. So if they're just satisfied, like they got the product that they bought, like everything's okay, that's great. They don't say anything. But as soon as another company comes up with a competitive product or a cheaper service or a similar service, they'll defect. They'll go right over to the other brand because there's no relationship built. And I think that's the key. It's like, how do you build these really long-lasting relationships with your customers so that they want to be loyal to you? And most people confuse satisfaction and loyalty. A satisfied customer is not a loyal customer. It's not necessarily anyway. And so we really have to strive for those relationships where you have customers that become evangelists or raving fans for your brand, for your company. And there's a way to do that. There's a way to engineer that to happen so you don't leave it to chance.
Yeah. I remember somebody saying, they were like, do you want your wife satisfied or loyal or something like that? I think you want her loyal, probably. So
yeah.
How do you, Jason, we go out there, do we have to create a baseline? I mean, let's say, run me through it myself. I mean, we've done in the last 10 years 125,000 customers. I'm thinking I'm amazing. What would you tell me? How would I even find out to get a baseline of how good I am or not good?
Well, I mean, so you guys are doing a tremendous amount of volume. And, you know, one of the top ways, like, let me ask you this, how do you get most of your customers? Like, what's the main methodology that you use to get new customers?
Well, I think
for us. Is it referrals, word of mouth? Is it?
No, I think in our industry and in a lot of the services, I mean, a lot of my business is coming from pay-per-click. I mean, it's coming from, you know, all kinds of pay-per-lead programs. It's coming from billboard TV. And I know the listeners probably have some form of maybe newspaper. So I would say, no, a majority of it is some form of paid media that's bringing them in.
Okay. And so that's typical for a lot of businesses that have local, you know, local footprints. But one of the ways that I found consistently across the board, whether you're a Fortune 100 business or you're a small business doing, you know, $20 to $100 million in revenue, word of mouth and referrals and testimonials and positive social proof is transformational for your brand, even if that's not what's happening. But even when people go on and they look for pay-per-click or they look at different ads or they're searching on social media sites or review sites or Yelp or whatever it is, they're starting to see more and more reviews. And if you start to look for businesses' reviews, you see so many negatives. And depending on the number of negatives, it really changes whether or not they're going to kind of go and choose to use your service. So that's step one. But step two is, how do they come back to you? Do they even remember the name of the service company that came out and did some work for them? In most cases, I found that they don't. They don't really know who that brand is. So the next time they need the same thing serviced, they go and they search again. So it's not a strategy where you're building lifetime value of a customer and you're building that, you know, that loyalty, as it were. So what we do is I have you get very, very granular and think about, we write what we call an ideal customer script. I want you to take your customer through the end of any part of your journey or the whole journey. So they call you or they book your appointment, they have you come out, you do whatever the service is, and at the very end of that, you know, that customer is just thrilled. You did a great job. Now they're going to go talk to a friend at a party. What exactly do you want that customer to say? Every adjective. If you wanted them to describe the experience and tell somebody about your business. So what I get you to do is design the end of the experience first. So we reverse engineer everything. And so when we get that level of granularity of knowing exactly what we want that customer to say with that kind of detail, then we can reverse engineer the entire journey that that customer goes on and create a whole bunch of different touch points that are imbued with those words, where we literally give them the words and reinforce them throughout the entire engagement process from prospect all the way through to customer. And then we give them good reasons that are designed into that to feel so happy and so connected and delighted, where they have this compulsion to tell other people. They want to tell other people. So that whole process starts by getting a true understanding of who that customer is, what's important to them, why they are working with your business, and why there's this kind of relationship to be built. Like, what is the big why for that? And once we know that, then we can design that script, and then we can reverse engineer the entire process.
Yeah, I love that about the reverse engineering, Jason. And also what I love that I was writing down here was that what is most important to them? Because, you know, I would love to say, I think today an issue that's going on, Jason, a lot of people are trying to treat it like everything's a one-size-fits-all. Well, really,
absolutely,
it's not. I mean, your customer might find something more important. So can you think of any real-life examples that you either heard of or worked on yourself where you're like, hey, this is what we did. We implemented this, and all of a sudden it was like, boom.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I'll give you a very simple example that will illustrate this, I think, beautifully. And also, one of the objections I hear to people when I start talking about this is like, oh, my God, like, this sounds like it's going to be so expensive or so complicated. And it just doesn't have to be. It should be fun, and it should be engaging. So I was working with a restaurant that, and if you know anything about the restaurant business, it's about how many turns per table they get per seating, right? So this restaurant had 30 tables or so, and in that, you know, they were at best getting half of those tables filled 1 to 1.5 times. And that's like bankruptcy state for this restaurant. And so they brought us in to help them figure out, how do they get these customers to come back? It's about loyalty. You can't survive as a small local restaurant by just having new customers all the time. It's just, you don't have that big a pool to bring people in. So you need the repetition. You need repeat business. And so we sat down and we started thinking about their community and those customers and what's important to them, not what's just important to someone for a restaurant. I mean, obviously people go to a restaurant because they need to eat, because they don't want to cook at home, or they're out, or they're traveling, or whatever. But in this case, we wanted to service this local community and have it be like a family place that businesses would come there for lunch, you know, in the afternoon. Families would come there in the evening for dinner. And so we came up with a strategy where this place was called the dinner table away from home. So it was just an idea, a concept about how do we make it feel like it's a home-cooked meal where you're coming here and everybody knows you. So if you remember the TV shows, I think we're probably around the same age. You were into Rush. So you remember the TV show Cheers, you know, and they had Norm would come in. Everyone would eat, Norm. It was where everyone knows your name. You know, it's, you know, a stranger is just a friend you haven't met yet idea. So we wanted people to feel so welcome when they came in there. So when a customer would come into the restaurant, the hostess would greet them and ask one simple question. Is this your first time dining with us? And from that point forward, a whole process unfolded. And so if you said, yes, this is my first time, the hostess would turn around behind her, and then there was two baskets with silverware wrapped in napkins. She would grab silverware that was wrapped in a white napkin if you were a first-time guest. If you said, no, I've been here before, they would grab silverware wrapped in a red napkin. And so they would bring you to your table, they place the silverware down, and you'd have no idea that any of this is even happening. And then different people that worked in the restaurant would come up, and if you had a red napkin, welcome back, it's so great to see you again. And the whole process was about inviting you, welcoming you, making you feel like you were known, and tailoring that. From there, the waiter, the servers would come up and say, oh, we're so glad to have you back. Our chef would like to prepare you a special appetizer. Are there any allergies at the table? Okay, no, great. So I'm going to bring that out. I'll get you some drinks, and then we'll go through the menu, okay? Great. So this whole process was about warming these people up to the fact that they could keep coming. If you were new, same kind of situation. They'd say, oh, we're so glad to have you. Let me share some of my favorite things on the menu. And we want to, as a first-time guest, our chef would love to prepare a special appetizer to welcome you to our kitchen. And so as we would do this, the customers would feel very warm, very welcome. At the end of the meal, the waiter or waitress would give them their bill, and they would say, you know, we want to thank you so much for coming with us. We'd really love for you to think of this as your dinner table away from home. So if you don't feel like cooking or you know, it's just one of those lazy evenings or, you know, you want something, a special meal, come here and dine with us and ask for me. I'd love for you to sit in my section again and enjoy dinner with us. And it was amazing. Like, literally, these people started coming back. They were bringing friends. They were bringing other people. They were expanding the relationship time and time again. And so after that happened, they would be asking for their favorite waiter, waitress. We would start to gain more data on those people. What were their favorite drinks? What are their favorite meals? We would surprise them and just give them a free meal sometimes, not because they had points, just because. And they would share that information. And they went from having only 50% of their table serviced to having over 100% capacity where they had waiting room and you couldn't get in. And this was all because we changed the napkins. Now, they were getting napkins from a linen service anyway, so instead of getting all white napkins, they got half of them red and then half of them white. So there's zero cost of implementation from that perspective, just some training for the staff and some strategic thinking about how to care for those customers, how to understand their needs and deliver on that.
I love that. It makes me think, and I don't know, and you probably know because you worked with these guys, is, you know, when you're in Disney, like these guys, I swear, like, they injected a chip into my, like, body or something, right? And, like, everywhere you go, that's, like, their world they live in is to create this experience that's so empowering that I think you just want to go back to these places because you're being recognized. And I love what you're saying there because today in a world where and I don't know, do you feel like with this whole social media, as much as you're connecting – electronically, I feel like we're disconnecting personally. Do you think that's true or you have something different about that?
I totally agree that that's the norm. I think that it's a shame because social media can offer such an ability to be more relevant and more connected and more individualized and do what we call mass customizing. We can start to custom tailor bits of the experience so that it's really more meaningful to someone on the individual level. The technology's there. It's like everywhere now. Back in the old days when we first started doing this, it was hard. You had to do a lot of work to be able to do that. Now it's all built into the free tools, free technology. It's the thinking. It's putting those strategies and having that process to understand it in place. So I think you're 100% right. We need to not go with this one-size-fits-all approach because it alienates our customers. It makes us feel like a number, not a person.
Yeah, and that number stuff. And you know, sometimes, and I think AT&T has been doing better at it when I've had conversations with them. But I hate being on a phone or something and feeling like, you know, you're paying. You know where I felt like a number? I was, my father was in the hospital and stuff. And it's like you feel like a number in the hospital, but it's your insurance that's paying that to happen. And I think that's a place that really needs to be improved upon. Give us some more, because I love the napkin example. I think a lot of people listening to this can find a way to play with that. Give us something else that about creating this journey.
Yeah, so I'll give you another example. I was working with a client, consulting with them about a week or so ago, and we went in. They're a reasonably sized business, and between $20 and $40 million in revenues per year, and they have about 30-40 employees, and they provide a high-end technological solution to a variety of different clients. And so one of the things that they hadn't done is really looked at what is happening for their customers every step along the way. So we stepped back and we looked at all the different ways that they interact with their customers, from the very first sales call all the way through to customer support and monitoring of the systems and such. And we found gaping holes where there was assumptions made of how things were happening, where they were incurring additional costs in their operations because they hadn't thought things through, and they realized they didn't even have a system to capture this. They were double shipping equipment, where they were shipping technicians out to job sites to reconfigure stuff that hadn't been previously configured properly, all because they never put it all out and really looked at it thoroughly. And we do that backstage, but on the front stage side, it's like, how are these affecting the customer? So if we start by looking at everything that the customer experiences, everything that touches the customer from that first point of contact, and then we look at all the systems and the processes that have to be in place, what it reveals as you start to do this is these gaping holes. And so within 2 days of going through this process, we saved easily $3 to $4 million because they didn't have the right flows in place. And not only were they, I mean, that's just on the operational side. Guaranteed, they're going to save some relationships and increase the lifetime value of those relationships because customers are going to be more delighted and they're going to buy more stuff. And it's not rocket science. This is not hard to do. It just takes the process to know how to go through that and engineer it. So as you're looking at your business, what you need to do is look very specifically at all of those interaction points with your customers and then go say, is it necessary? Is it creating what we call a point of pain or a point of pleasure? And the more frictionless, the more effortless you can make the interactions with your clients, the better it is for them across the board. Because clients are busy. Like, there's no time. We want time back in our lives. We don't want complexity. So the simpler that you can make the interactions with your clients, the more streamlined and the less work that your clients have to do, the better their experience will be. So it's about really getting into that nitty-gritty and figuring those things out. And from that, more often than not, people are worried that it's going to cost more money to do this. Almost every single time, we've had way more savings than we've had to deal with additional costs to implement something like this.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's just creating a whole new level of awareness. Tell me about, Jason, about how to be thinking about lifetime relationships with clients instead of, I see in the market today, it looks like people are more concerned about creating a one-time relationship. Like, oh, I'm just going to serve them, make as much money, and then I'm out of town.
Yeah. So I love this question. Thank you. I see this a lot with people in the internet marketing space. I see this a lot with people that have bricks and mortar businesses. I see this a lot with authors that are just writing a book, and that's all they're thinking about, that one book. And what I like to say is, you know, if you can step back and zoom out a little bit, like, you know, fly out in a rocket ship above Earth and kind of look back. Look at that relationship in a bigger context, in a much larger context, and start to think about if you start with that customer at the core and you really understand them, what are their goals, what are their frustrations, what are their needs, you know, and you really get a good understanding of them. And incidentally, I have a great tool that I'll be happy to share with your audience to go through this process. But if you get to that level of understanding, what they want to see, people want to see a path of progress. They want to see where they can go next. Too often, as a business, we put a product or a service or a book or something out there, and we're not thinking about what else there is, and we're not showing people a path to the next step. We do this with our employees as well all the time. So part of like coming up with these journeys is looking at your employee journey inside as well, looking at your customer journey beyond that one product or that one service. Where can you take them? What else can you do for them? And the more that you get or you're able to create intimacy and a solid relationship with your customers, the more data, the more information, the more knowledge that you're going to amass, which is going to let you know what else can you offer to them? What more can you do for them? And they're going to want to have more from you. See, the thing about creating an experience this way by design and really understanding all those touch points is that your customers are literally begging you at the end of that journey for more interaction, because it's pleasant, because it's creating more freedom for them, and it's delivering on something. It's, you know, there's an old copywriter saying, I'm sure you're familiar with this, is that, you know, you want to enter the conversation that's already happening in your customer's mind. I want you to do that because I want you to really know what your customers are thinking. But there's an even better saying out there that if you can explain the pains and the frustrations and the wants and needs of your customer better than they can explain it themselves, you're going to win. And so by going through these exercises, you will know your customers on such an intimate level, you'll be able to explain what's happening better than they will. And then you can provide more products and services that they need. You know, Henry Ford has the old saying was, like, you know, if I ask people what they wanted, they tell me, you know, faster horses. So with your products and services, if you understand their pain points, their frustrations, you can innovate new solutions, new products that they need that they may not even be able to tell you about right now. But when they have that relationship with you, they're going to allow you and almost encourage you to share those ideas and those products and that bigger relationship with them. They need the vision from you, from the business, to show them where they can go with you. And it has to be done in an authentic, transparent, safe, and relevant manner.
Yeah, that's really great. So give us the steps. Someone who's listening right now, let's give them like, okay, so step one, do this. Step two, do this. Step three, dig into this. And then, and here's even a bigger question, Jason. So we implement this. How do we know we're on track? Is there a buzz? Is there, we look at the bottom line profit. How do we know we're even, this thing's working, this change?
Cool. So no matter what you do in kind of approaching mapping out your journeys or whatever, it has to hit two things. We've talked about one, which is the needs of the customer, the desires of the customer, and even the urgency of the customer, something that the customer needs like right this second. So you're dealing with that. But on the other side, it has to align with the business's needs and goals. And sometimes that's, you know, loyalty. Sometimes that's new customer acquisition. Sometimes it's social proof and more social media reviews or responses. So once you get the understanding of these two ends of the spectrum, you can start to put solutions in place that are going to map to those goals. And what we look at are what we call experience impact indicators. So we try and find out what are the behaviors that we can measure that we can see that these are moving us towards those goals. So if we want more positive reviews out there, we can see, again, as we reverse engineer that, our goal is to get more positive reviews on social media. We can look at what are complaints out there. We can do some research on competitors and other things that our people are saying, and we can understand where the frustrations lie. So we can analyze where are these common frustrations from our customers, and then we can, again, reverse engineer the experience, and we can encourage a new behavior. See, the way that we do this, we have results at the end. Like, these are the results we want. That's the big end picture in mind. Then, before that, there's behaviors that get us those results. And before behaviors, there's attitudes. So attitudes influence behaviors that create the results. What we like to do is we like to inject experiences between attitudes and behaviors, because if we can add more experiences that are designed positively to move the customer where we want, we're influencing attitudes that change behaviors that get different results. And so it's very, very systematic. That's why I call it an art and science. You know, there's a scientific way to start looking at all of these different data points and understanding where are things happening. But then we can, you know, do that artistic, start crafting it, knowing people, understanding them. We can start looking at what do we put in there. So you can measure very specifically these experience impact indicators. You can see, are you getting more social responses? Are you getting more positive phone calls inbound? Are your sales going up? Are you finding that you're having more efficiencies in your operating costs? You have to decide what those things are, and then you can absolutely measure them. And you have to. I mean, there's the things that get measured get done, right? So you have to measure this. We don't do this just because it feels good. It does feel good, but it drives better results. So it's about understanding what we're trying to go for and then putting these things in place. And we found that whether you're doing this on the inside of the business with employees, you know, we can measure the bottom line all day long or the top line. And I think it's important to really focus on those things. But at the same time, we have to look at things that we can control right now. You know, and, you know, I have my pilot's license. And when you learn to fly a plane, you learn about small corrections. You know, if you don't make small corrections along the way, you get way off course. And so we put things in place that are managing the behaviors of and identifying the certain behavioral elements of both our customers and our team members, our employees, and then we're able to make these corrections that'll get us to that right experience. So it's critically important to do that. So if you want, I'll pop through some of the key steps that I think you need to take. As you asked, I think first and foremost, you have to deeply, deeply understand your customer. And as I mentioned, I have a tool which I'll share with you guys at the end. You can download. It's called the Customer Persona Creator Tool. And the idea is that you can I run you through a wizard where you answer questions about your customer, not just their age and are they married or not, but those are important, but all sorts of other things that are going to get you to the core of who they are. And to the core of what's important, why they buy, how they like to be communicated with, you know, what's most important to them, what are they going to say about you? You know, so when you get that clarity, that's first. The second thing you do is you write that ideal customer script that I mentioned. When you go to the end of the relationship, the end of the buying process, the end of the event, the end of reading your book, the end of your online course, the end of your service call, whatever that is, and I want you to write in as much detail, as many adjectives, as many descriptive words as you can, I want you to write, what would you love your customer to say to somebody else? Take me through it from their eyes. Put on their glasses. Step in their shoes and tell me what would they say to somebody that would be valuable. And once you get that, then what we can do is we can take a step back. We can look at the entire journey. So we start to map out what's happening for the customer from the moment that they see our first pay-per-click ad. They look at our website, they look on Yelp, they look on Google, they look on Facebook, they find out what other people are saying. We go through each of these steps and we look to see what is the customer feeling at each of those points. Are they stressed? Are they anxious? Are they optimistic? Are they excited? Are they frustrated? And as we start to look at how the customer's feeling, we can start to craft this journey. And I think of it like a symphony. Right? If people like a dynamic range. They don't want just one, you know, one monotone thing that happens across. So if you're over-delivering, like one thing that people say all the time that makes me crazy is they say, oh, under-promise and over-deliver. If you over-deliver to your clients, you're going to make them happy. The problem with that is that if you always over-deliver, that becomes expected. It's not over-delivery. It's just delivery. So we have to set a dynamic range. And that's not to say you don't over-deliver, but you do it strategically. You strategically over-deliver. And you take them on this journey where it's planned. I call this planned spontaneity. It seems spontaneous to the customer, but it's planned for you. And so you plan your over-delivery for key moments, just like you mentioned Disney, just so that you know not every touch point, not every moment is created equal. So we find the key ones, the biggest ones, where it's going to impact the customer the most, and we make sure that we take them on a rising action. We don't just hit them with something. It's a journey. So it's like going on a roller coaster. You go up, and you go down a little bit, and then you go around, and you go up. So you literally design it so that they're having a blast, and they go on this journey with you, and they love it. And at the end of it, they want to go on the ride again. And that's the key. So if you do the customer work, you understand them, you create the persona. And incidentally, you might have 10 personas that work with your business. You might have 4 for one product. You might have 2 for another. And each one is the more deeply you know them, the more you can tailor parts of your experience to each one of those big customer groups. And it works every time. This just does not fail. And the results are just amazing. So if you go through that process and you and reverse engineer it the way I'm saying, you're going to find efficiencies and cost savings. You're going to end up having customers for life. You're going to end up having more referrals than possibly you know what to do with, which creates the next problem. How do you grow your business? Which is by focusing on your team and your employee experience and making sure that you're growing your team both in their skills and their understanding of experience. I mean, customers, like most of the complaints that people have out there is that they didn't feel cared for by the company. They didn't feel like they were important enough by the company. They had an employee that treated them with indifference. So teaching your employees not just about the skills and the checklist that they need to do the technical part of their job, but that softer side, that how do I want to handle and work with my customers, is oftentimes even more important than some of those other skills. So they have to have you have to have a training program and have a journey mapped out for that as well. And this stuff just works. I guarantee it.
Yeah, I can see how easily it can work, especially you don't really need to – You don't need to add any more resources. It's just about doing what you do so much better. So why don't you – and do you think when people are complaining about a company, Jason, do you think it could be just a culture thing? I mean, from the top down, they're not being treated right? And I guess maybe a different question is, Jason, can I create a great experience if my employees are miserable and felt like they're not treated right?
Absolutely not. Will never work.
Right.
You can do it for a day, but it's on the surface. There's an authenticity that has to come from within. You know, so I tell you to engineer all this, to figure this all out, to map it all out, but then I also tell everyone, and then it starts inside. It starts with your employees because, you know, there's the three-legged stool. You've got your employees, you got your company, and you've got your customers. And if you first focus on the employees, they will take care of your customers who will in turn take care of the company, and it goes round and round. So it's so important to have the right culture, to have the right understanding. And so part of what we talk about in our program when we teach this is the importance of the mission, vision, values for your business. Like, really, what is your company's big why? And everyone has to share that mission and share that vision and share the values. And then we go way, way, way deeper and more granular, and we want you to have what we call a position mission for every team member. What is your team member's big why? Every individual's, and we help them craft that themselves. They have to understand the big why of the company, the why of their department. They have to understand who the customers are and why their customers are doing business. So even if it's a company that's four layers removed from touching a customer, they have to understand what their role does and how that ultimately impacts that customer. And then when they get that position mission statement nailed and they know what their big why within that company is, everything changes. Because if why is the precursor to everything else, how is easy. How is easy. So that's why we have to get that understanding of what do we want that customer to say at the end. That tells us why we're doing all this. Why are we going through all the stuff that we do on a daily basis? It's for the customer to say that. And so then what's my role as an employee within this? What am I going to do? How am I going to impact that? And when every employee on your team can answer what their why is, everything changes. There's a different level of understanding, and there's a different level of significance that each employee feels for the company and for their role in it. And you know, it's just beautiful. It's beautiful. And the company, the customers, the gratitude that oozes from the customers when they see this, when they experience this, and they have those feelings, it's what grows your business. That's why you crush your competition, because it's just holistically different. It's that customer is at the core. That's where we started, a customer-centric mindset. How do you really understand that? And how do you put that in action? And that's how you do it.
Yeah, I love it. And it makes so much sense, and it's not difficult. You just have to be aware of it. But sometimes you think maybe, Jason, maybe the entrepreneurs are just too busy. They maybe just don't focus on it because maybe they're just burning the midnight oil.
Absolutely. And I think that's true because most entrepreneurs, I mean, and I, you know, ask everyone to reflect on this. Why did you start your business in the first place? I mean, if you did it because, like, I mean, for me, I wanted freedom. I knew I was kind of, I joke, but I was fundamentally unemployable. I couldn't work for someone else because I wanted to create stuff. I had something that I wanted to accomplish. And you want to help people. Like, I genuinely want to help and work with entrepreneurs and small business owners and help them crush the competition. I believe entrepreneurship and small businesses, we change the world. We have the ability to change the world and make the world a better place. So if that's why you're in this, not just to make a quick buck, then it's important to take a step back and say, how can I do this better where I can impact more people, where I can bring more people on my team and help them have the lives that they want, where I can help more customers? And if you understand, if you try this, you'll see that so many things get better. You know, I don't want to sound like too Pollyanna, but when you start having customers that are so grateful and feel so understood, everything changes. And it's just, it's a more joyful place. I mean, I know people, buddies of mine, that have great companies that they love what they do. When they started doing this, it got greater. They had no context for how great it could even get. And that's the beauty of this. It's, there's no downside. You remove obstacles, you remove frustrations, you remove friction, both for the customers and the employees. You end up with the essential components that need to be there to make the machine work, and you find that you have more freedom. And so if you are one of those entrepreneurs or small business owners or employees or managers that are listening to this, take a step back and say, what could I do if I had more time to think about my customers? Well, you have to power through that beginning. You have to do that thinking first, and then you start finding more time to work on your business instead of always in your business. And it's just, again, it's a beautiful way to do it. It's breathtaking when you can get to that place, because the gratitude that you feel from your team members, the gratitude that you feel from your customers, it's just powerful. It makes you feel like everything that you do when you wake up every day, is, you go to work, it's fun. It's like, I think about it, it's going to fun, not going to work, you know, and you're creating that value.
It's very rewarding when you know that you're definitely delivering that value. So let's flip hands here a little bit. Let's think of, what are some other things besides the customer service? And what we say is, it's like the customer on the outside, the customer on the inside, right? Our employees are the customers on the inside. What are some other key things that you've learned from exiting businesses, building businesses, that you just think we should, you know, we should pay attention to?
Yeah, I mean, as far as exiting a business, and tied to the same thing, and I learned this kind of the hard way, is, you know, as you're growing a business, it's hard to look at the business that you're building from a buyer's perspective. And so one of the things that I learned through my first transaction that then made the subsequent exit that I had much better and profitable and exciting, was that I started each business thinking about the value of the business from a buyer's perspective, putting on a buyer's mind. What are they looking for in the business? What do they care about? What makes the business more stable, more valuable, more flexible, more interesting? And so, you know, in my first endeavor, we didn't have as much of a depth of management staff as we ultimately needed for that business. So that was a vulnerability for a potential buyer, and that changed valuation. We had client concentrations in different ways that a buyer may have been concerned about or unhappy about. We had just set up our whole system in ways that were really very clear to us, but they weren't necessarily clear to other people. So if you're going for exit, I think you have to figure out, how do you adopt the buyer's mind and the buyer's lenses and really be able to look at your business that way and check your ego at the door, because it's hard to do. I speak from experience there. It was really hard to look at the business from the outside and say, oh, gosh, you know, we shouldn't have done these three things that I would have fought tooth and nail for, but I learned, you know, at the end that those were maybe not the best value-creating steps from an exit strategy perspective. So from an exit perspective, I think that's good. You know, I learned another thing. Like, you know, there's a lot of opportunities to go out there and acquire other businesses. When I sold my first big company, and I was still on the management team of the other, we went out and we started doing some acquisitions, and we got some amazing, talented people and some great customers and regional coverage, and we didn't have to pay much at all. We just brought them in and took away some of the frustrations and stresses that they had, because they were struggling in their mind. They weren't being able to get where they wanted, and they didn't really have the stomach to run their own business, but they wanted to be part of it. So like, just looking at other ways to grow your business through acquisition, even for small companies, is a definite possibility. So that was another interesting thing that I definitely learned along the way.
The good part is you're letting people hear this now which I don't know if they understand the value of this, but it's huge value for someone. I mean, how much more could you have maybe, you know, exited out of to the bottom line for yourself if you, what you know now, right? I guess that's what my dad used to always say, you know, if you only knew what you knew, you know, back then and could go back in time, I mean, what's the power?
Yeah.
That's no excuse for knowing now, you know?
100%. And that's what I'm saying, you know, those things, you know, if you have any interest, even if you don't have interest in selling your business or exiting at some point in the future, what's really exciting and interesting to do is to learn a little bit about how businesses are valued. You can speak to people, you can go out and you can meet with some business valuation experts and you know, get some analysis and just take a pulse check on your business, not with any intent to exit, but just to see what that is, because it starts to give you a slightly different perspective that you don't necessarily have as a small business owner until you're at that point. And if you can have that knowledge and that trajectory 2-3 years earlier, 5 years earlier, you can end up with a much bigger exit at the end of that. So
yeah,
it's
definitely
a really cool thing to do.
What have you given me some perspective? And I haven't actually, I don't think I've ever asked anybody this question, so I'm curious how this would be. Talk to me about maybe vendor relationships or working that customer satisfaction and delivering value to people that you're doing business with as like maybe a vendor.
Yeah, that's an amazing question. And one of the key strategies that we had in a couple of my businesses was focusing on the vendor relationships. So when I define your customers, I realize I didn't do that earlier. I define customers as quote-unquote audience. So I think about it as everyone that touches the front stage side of your business. So I think of your vendors. I think of partners. I think of joint venture partners, affiliates. I think of anybody that might promote your business or help your business or complement your business as potential customers, because they can refer you, they can help you, they can bring more sales. So one of our big vendors at one point was LG Electronics. And we were selling tremendous volume of flat panel screens in that business. And we had such a great relationship. We actually designed the relationship. We brought them into different experiences with us, and we had developed it to the point where they would actually create special SKUs or special model numbers just exclusively for our company without us paying any extra money for it. So we had technology functionality built into certain displays that none of our competitors could have. And so we would be able to go into projects that we would have and bring solutions that nobody in the world could have that didn't cost us a nickel, all because we invested in the relationship with our vendors. And they would bring us opportunities because they knew the level of dedication that we had to servicing clients, that they were going to have less phone calls or less complaints or less returns or RMAs or anything like that. So it was a really beneficial thing. And we also were able to save a lot of money because they would give us preferential pricing. So our cost structure would go down because we would really treat our vendors as if they were partners in our business. We brought them into strategy retreats when we would talk about our 90-day plan, our six-month plan, our one-year plan. We would invite key vendors to participate in parts of those exercises with our whole management team so that they would see where we were heading. Of course, we didn't let them into the whole thing, but we brought them in for key moments where we would talk about how can we service you better as a partner? What else could we as a customer of yours do better? How could we be a better customer? How can we help you grow your business? And they were blown away because who calls up a vendor and says, how can I help you grow your business? Most of the time, someone's calling them up, beating them up for pricing, or they want more product than they have, or there's a problem. We're calling them with opportunities and involving them in growth and strategic discussions. And they were blown away. They loved us. So I think it's an incredible, incredible opportunity to leverage those relationships. It's a missed opportunity if you're not doing it. So 100% love that idea, and we're living proof. It worked incredibly well.
Yeah, yeah, I love the information there. It really should get people thinking about. And if you were to take all of this and summarize this, Jason, into one box, like, I mean, the vendor end, the customers, the employees, what would you say? Like, what would be that under or overarching phrase that you would say, if you just think of this globally and everything you're doing, you'll be very well served. What would that be?
Value creation. How do you create value for each of these other groups first and always lead with creating value for others before you worry about it for yourself? Give, and then you will receive. But if you focus on, again, it's that understanding that persona. What do they need? What are their frustrations? What are their goals? If you can deliver on that and create value for everyone around you, it will come back to you in spades. Do it authentically. Do it because you want to help those people, because you want them to grow, and they will reciprocate. And they will usually reciprocate tenfold, in my experience anyway. So that's a great question. But that is the common denominator from my point of view.
Okay. As we get ready to head towards the end of the show, I want you just to think of one of your, and I know you've given a lot, I want you to think of one more just big golden strategy nugget that you're like, you know what? Just listen to this, and this thing will make you some gold. Different than you shared. And, man, I'm really putting you in some corners to really work hard here. But give me something that people will just go, holy crap, that was even that just trumped everything you just told me.
Yeah, so to trump everything I just told you. Again, I'm gonna reference something I mentioned a little bit earlier, but with a little more detail because I think it's important. I'll start out with this. People, businesses, companies, customers, kids, families, we want wow. We're looking for wow experiences in our lives. And wow goes both ways. It goes to the positive side, wow, that was awesome, and it goes to the negative side, wow, that sucks. And you have to make sure that you kind of engineer wow and you understand. And wow is not something that you can force, but you can engineer a situation that will allow someone to experience it. It's a reaction. It's primal. It's guttural. It happens because when someone is genuinely moved. And so one of the ways to do this, the ways that people like at Disney or other amazing brands or destinations will do this, is they do it by creating surprise. Wow is defined as surprise of an elevated magnitude. So the way we do this and the way I want you to think about this, and not just in your business, in your personal relationships, is the idea I mentioned earlier called plan spontaneity. And the way I do this, I sit down every New Year's Day and I write out 6 to 7 things that I'm going to do for my spouse, for my kids, for my most key valued relationships. And then I plan them out, I schedule them. And there's a couple rules. They cannot be unexpected dates. It can't be on their birthdays or their anniversaries or Valentine's Day. Do these things for times when they don't expect it. So on some random Tuesday, your husband or your wife or your kids get some flowers, or you have a special ticket to a ball game that they didn't know about, or whatever it is that they love. Do it for them, things that they love. But plan that out and allow them to just pop up at an unexpected time, and you will see a level of gratitude, surprise, and delight that will rock your world and theirs. So I leave you with that because I think that is an amazing strategy. It has served me in every relationship I've ever had, both personally and professionally. And it's something that I just I adore the concept, and I know it works.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Tell people, Jason, how will they go about getting this awesome report that you talked about, and how do they find out more about you?
Sure. So I put a few key, what I call customer experience killers, into a PDF document for you. That also has a link to this customer persona tool. And I talk about things in there like one size fits all doesn't work, like we started off with. I talk about how to do mass customization. I share with you how to manage that dangerous place of always over-delivering. So there's some great tactical strategies and some tactics that you can take away right from that. And also there's that customer persona tool, which is a little piece of software. So if you want to grab that, you can go to go.cxformula.com/CEO-warrior. And it's an exclusive page that I put together for this group. And take me up on this. The tool in there is fantastic. It will help you get to know your customers on a level that you've never thought possible. And the PDF has a bunch of great strategies and tactics, like I said, that will literally transform some of your thinking and some of the relationships that you have.
Yeah, I love it. And I can't thank you enough for being on today's show. You delivered such massive value to everybody. And I want them really to listen and get a plan here to do this, because you gave them golden nuggets that we know doesn't cost them much more. Just some tweaks and changes and big rewards like you shared. So thank you very much, Jason.
Mike, thanks for having me on the show, and good luck to everyone here. I know you guys can knock it out of the park.
Thank you. And there you have it, everybody. And you know we don't leave without reviewing some big warrior nuggets here, and Jason gave us plenty. I mean, what is the experience gap that you might have in your company? And just look to close that gap. And what about reverse engineering the experience? And make sure you know the customer, right? But what is important to them? I mean, you might know the customer, but do you really know what is very important to them? And how about the simple napkin thing that he shared, right? How can you use that example in your business so everybody all of a sudden, hey, how are you today? Welcome back. And they build that extra rapport and show people a path to the next step and look to create relationships from clients. And if you can explain wants and needs of the customer better than they understand it themselves, well, you know, what else? That's a big boom of golden nuggets in there that you can find. And understand the results you want. And what is your team's position mission? I love that. I'm going to be implementing that in my company, that position mission. And if you understand the why, guess what? The how is pretty easy. And how can you serve your vendors? It's a good reminder for all of us to make sure we serve first. And value creation and how you create value for others always before yourself. And he ended us with a really big bang there, right? Create a wow experience, something that exceeds customers' expectations. Well, that's it for this episode of the CEO Warrior Show. I'd also be grateful if you'd rate my podcast on iTunes. That helps tremendously with keeping my podcast visible so people who have never heard of it can discover it. If you have already done this, thank you very much. I'm grateful. Be sure to connect with me on social media. It's a great way to ask me any questions or offer feedback on the show. I'm also reachable at MikeA@CEOWarrior.com. Until next time, remember, massive wealth, tons of freedom, and market domination is only one action step away.
This has been another powerful business building episode of the CEO Warrior Podcast Show with your host, Business Warrior, Mike Agliaro. Ready to experience real ideas, real change, and real success in your business? Check out the Warrior Fast Track Academy at warriorfasttrackacademy.com.